This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to Street Knowledge. I'm Chris Graham, and we're live on Facebook. If you're listening on the podcast, thanks for joining us there as well. We are going to talk some UVA basketball today. We're going to look ahead to Florida State. We don't have a lot of time. This is another one of those Saturday-Monday doubles, I like to call them, where you play on Saturday, then you play on Big Monday. And it's an honor to play on Big Monday. And this one is probably the best Big Monday of the season, at least at this stage from an ACC standpoint, as Virginia will face Florida State, the top two teams in the league, will face each other tomorrow night down in Tallahassee. But first, let's talk about wrapping things up from Virginia's win over North Carolina. We did a post game, a quick one, 10 minutes last night, and then I got to work writing stories. I hinted in that 10 minutes as to where my focus was going to be post game. Defensive game plan was the key. Just amazing defensive game plan and then execution. It's one thing to plan, and then if you get punched in the mouth and you don't follow the plan, it's another thing. The narrative a week ago for Virginia was Virginia has to win with his offense because his defense wasn't what Virginia fans have come to know, Virginia program has come to know. Not to say it was bad, but there was a point recently where Virginia's defense was ranked 25th in the KenPom.com defensive efficiency ratings, 25th out of 357. And we're all like wondering what is going on with that defense, because, you know, usually you're in the top five. In the last week, Virginia in 80 minutes of basketball has given up 97 points, 49 to Georgia Tech, 48 to North Carolina. Carolina came in too, averaging 71.4 points a game. They just scored 91 in their win at Duke last Saturday. Couldn't get to 50 once again at JPJ against UVA, four straight times that's happened, which is just astounding, because if one of those times, that was a Carolina team that won a national championship. So you look at, you look at the game plan. I went over this in the pregame analysis. Carolina, not a lot of outside shooting. The point guard, Caleb Love, God love him, he's a five-star freshman. He's I'm sure, you know, they don't give those stars out for no reason. He's going to be a good player eventually, but he's not right now. And so you don't get a lot of creativity or creation or productivity from your guards. And then you got a lot of bigs, too many bigs. Garrison Brooks, preseason player of the year in the ACC. Armando Bacot, Dayron Sharp, another five-star. Walker Kessler, another five-star. You know, they look great in the airport, but you know, there's only so many big guys you can throw out there at one time, basically two, and they've got so many. And so, what your game plan from Virginia's standpoint would be is what we said it should be. You know, you post to post double, you try to make it hard for them to get those inside points, and then, you know, then Carolina's reduced to late shot clock heaves, either from three or contested jumpers, and that's what happened. Virginia took away the inside game, even though Carolina, you know, fastidiously tried to get the ball inside. 28 of the 58 field goal attempts from the Tar Heels were at the rim, layups or dunks. 28 of their 58, that's an astounding figure in terms of attempts. Almost half their shots were at the rim, either layups or dunks. They only made 13 of those shots, 46.4%. That's a Carolina team that, because of the strength that they have, all those talented guys in the post, they shoot 60.4% at the rim, 46.4% yesterday. That jumps out at you. UVA blocked five UNC shots. Four of those were Jay Huff. But there was pressure even when the shots weren't getting blocked. You know, it was altering. There was the post-to-post defense really getting, you know, bad positioning on shots from Carolina. There was a lot of rush shots because of the way things were going. That post-to-post double, it's something that, you know, they actually didn't use it very much in the Pitt game. Pardon. Justin Champagne, the Pitt 6'6 swingman, I guess you used to call him now. He's probably more of a stretch four. But Champagne averaging 19 and, you know, I think 12 a game, 19 points, 12 rebounds a game. He had 18 and 10, but really had to work for those. And it was mainly Virginia scrapped the post-to-post double early. He passed one out and got an open shot, and Tony decided during the timeout, let's just have Sam go head up with him, and it worked. The post doubles work great in this game. They work with, most teams, when you double the post, you double the post with a guard coming down. And then what that does, of course, leave his guy open for a short pass, relatively. If you're in the right post, you get the pass, and then the guard crunches down you, you just pass it back out. It's a short pass, and that can lead to some open shots, and it happens to be the case a lot. Virginia, when the ball's in the post, so you got your post defender behind, you actually double with the other post, and he comes across the lane and doubles, or comes, you know, a diagonal wherever he's from. And so then what has to happen is, if you're doubling and you're trying to, what your goal is there, you got, say it's Sam Hauser in the post at 6'8", you double with Jay Huff at 7'1", you're trying to make it so that, you know, they double with their hands up in the air, so make it hard to see through to get a pass through to the lane. The guard on the opposite side has to crunch in to at least have someone there to intercept the other big who's going to be rolling to the rim with the double. Not necessarily that a 6'3 Casey Morsell or Reese Beekman or a 5'9 Kia Clark is necessarily going to stop a 6'10 guy from scoring there, but at least there's some impediment there. What your goal is, okay, so if you take that away, then it's a cross court pass to the perimeter. And then that allows that defender, the guard who's come across to try to slow down the offensive player cutting to the rim, at least some time to close out. You're not going to stop a shot necessarily, but you allow some time to close out. Maybe the pass is offline. I mean, there's a few things that can happen. That longer pass, more difficult pass, Virginia ran that to almost perfection yesterday, numerous times. And so you see a Carolina team that, you know, scores 74.1 points game, scoring 48. No one scoring in double figures. The leading scorer was Walker Kessler, the one big that's left on the outside looking in largely. He was averaging 6.2 minutes per game this year coming in, just the odd man out, and he ended up with 9 points, and that was the leading scorer for this Carolina team. Virginia kept Carolina off the boards largely. I mean, Carolina had 12 offensive rebounds, but they only resulted in 13 second chance points. This is for a Carolina team that gets a lot of points off of offensive rebounds, either directly from the post or the, you know, resetting the offense, kicking back out, those opportunities being there. Also was key limiting live ball turnovers. Carolina had 6 points in transition. That stands out. Carolina gets 20% of its offense from transition. It gets a lot of points. It was like 33% or so of its offense from the post, and just made it hard in those areas for Carolina to get shots. And they were 2 of 16 from three. That kind of played to type. Not a good jump shooting team, not a good 3-point shooting team. And now, you know, so you've executed that game plan. It was a very different game plan against Georgia Tech. It's a very different offense. It's a more guard-oriented offense for the Yellow Jackets. You know, had to keep down Jose Alvarado and that group. So within a span of 4 days, Virginia keeping two very good offenses under 50 points. Maybe now we got to say this Virginia team maybe can win with this defense here. And I'm saying, I'm being facetious, because obviously they can win with their defense. This group is pretty solid. Other thing I think I would point out is something from our post-game coverage. If I can get to it here. Interesting. I went back on my story and it took me to an archived version of the story. There we go. The word finesse. Tony Bennett was threatening to add a word to the lexicon. Might have been the word of the year if things had worked out the wrong way for us. He called his team a little too finesse after the Virginia Tech game, the loss, the one loss we've had since Christmas. Finesse. And then you look at how Virginia beat the toughest team. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, that Carolina is the best team, certainly, that Virginia will play down the stretch here, but tough, big, physical team, North Carolina. That's how Carolina basketball is built. And, you know, when I was doing my pregame analysis of this, the question you had to have would be, how would Carolina's bigs, who are big, muscle-bound, bulky, strong guys who score in the post, they back guys down and score in the post, get rebounds and everything else, how would that work against Virginia's bigs, who are largely 3-point shooters? I mean, you know, offensively, they're more effective standing outside on the 3-point line and scoring that way, the outside in offense that Virginia has. You know, so Virginia's bigs have to guard Carolina's bigs down low, and then Carolina's bigs have to guard Virginia's bigs out high. Well, let's just say defensively, you know, mentioned Virginia held Carolina to 48 points. The leading scorer had 9. Garrison Brooks had 5, you know, preseason ACC player of the year. Bako had 7, you know, just you know, not good games for those guys offensively. And then Huff had 18 points, 12 rebounds. Hauser had 17 points, 4 of 6 from 3. The finesse guys beat the tough guys at the tough man's game and also at the finesse man's game. Jay Huff, 1 foul. That stands out. And it's funny, he's talked after the game about his dad tipped him off that UNC's plan was getting in foul trouble. That's everyone's plan, Jay. You know, save your dad having to tell you that. It's all over everywhere. It's not just all over Twitter. That is the game plan. Go at Jay Huff and get him in foul trouble, because, and it's not even Jay's fault. It's not, you know, Jay, it's not your fault. The officials in the ACC tend to like calling moving screens on you when you're not moving. They like to call you for touch fouls when you don't necessarily haven't touched a guy. It just happens. You're 7-1. You're easy to see. 1 foul. And that's, and then he has 18 points, 12 rebounds. That's the J-Huff that we need to see. Hauser, you know, I mentioned last week that in the win over Pitt, to me, a stout defensive effort, even though Champagne had numbers, he had to work for those numbers, 4 of 12 in the second half when Virginia took control, kind of numbers for Sam Hauser. So Virginia's biggest won the battle. And now we, well, Finesse, let's just leave it. It's fun to talk that way. And you know, Tony's good. You know, he's called out his team a couple times through the media. And because there was one, I guess it was Trey Murphy, said they didn't like being called soft, so they, you know, they played hard as a result. So you know what buttons to push, and Tony certainly has done so. Let's turn our attention to Florida State real quick as we you know, get ready for Big Monday. This is a hard thing for me. I prepare these reports, these pregame analysis. It takes a couple hours to do. I go through KenPom.com and Synergy Sports and Hoop Math, Sport Reference, and then I go through my own mental catalog of you know, breaking down opponents. And it's one thing when you're on a schedule, the normal schedule of Wednesday, Saturday. You know, I try to get them out 2 days ahead of time so that people have a chance to read and that kind of thing. When you play Saturday night, Monday, you know, we spend so much time, Scott German and I, our team, we spend so much time breaking down the previous game that, you know, like for me last night, I think it was 1:15 a.m. when I was finally done with the UNC game. And then you turn around, you wake up the next morning, hey, it's already Sunday. We're already, you know, tomorrow's game day again. Got to get ready for Florida State. So, and this is a Sunday. And so, yeah, working hard, getting myself acclimated, hopefully getting some of you folks ready for Florida State. So what UVA basketball fans need to know about Florida State? This is a program I have tremendous respect for. Leonard Hamilton, you know, I mentioned in the column I wrote, Leonard Hamilton is probably on that short list now that Tony Bennett has won a national championship. He's on that short list of coaches, the best coaches that don't yet have one. And when I was researching Hamilton, it was really interesting, you know, because to me, it felt like Florida State has been around for a while. The last 4+ years, this Florida State program is borderline elite. I'm not sure the word borderline even applies. Averaging 26 wins a year, they've been to a Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, and not even including what last year could have been. They finished in the final rankings number 4. They were the ACC regular season champions, just didn't get to do anything because of COVID, right? So, I mean, this is an ascending program, and it just because of that recent 4 years of success made me think that it's been a while that they've been around. Well, actually, when I looked it up, one, I mean, I didn't realize that Hamilton has been there. This is his 19th season. He's been there since 2002. And that it took a while for him to rebuild. You know, I remembered Florida State had success. It was Pat Kennedy back in the 90s when Florida State first came in the league, and they were good. And they came in, they had Charlie Sura Ward, the quarterback who ended up playing in the NBA, Charlie Ward. You know, they, Anthony Edwards, they had a group, and they, their first game in the ACC, they went to the Dean Dome and beat Carolina by 12 points. I mean, they debuted well in that year, but then, you know, Kennedy's team started struggling. He ends up being let go, and Hamilton takes over a program that was a losing program. They had losing seasons two of his first 3 years, didn't make his first NCAA tournament at Florida State until year seven. I don't know how many people make it to year seven anymore if you don't go to an NCAA tournament. But he got there in year seven. They went to four NCAA tournaments in a row, starting with that year seven. Then they had a four-year stretch where they went to three NITs in 1 year with no postseason. So now you're talking about a guy that he had a little taste of it. Now 4 years of Florida State basically playing on Tuesday in the ACC tournament, right? And then they've turned it around. And it just feels like it's a self-repeating machine. And then this year, you look at this team this year, they've had to deal with some things like everybody's dealt with. They're just coming off their own 2 week COVID pause, had to rally in overtime, had to rally to force overtime, and then beat Wake Forest at home yesterday, 92-85. So, I'm sure folks are saying, oh, they only beat Wake by seven. They had to go to overtime to do it. It's tough coming back and your first game in 2 weeks and getting your feet back under you. So good for them. They won the game. That's at this stage, it's games like that. You just go out there and win. As you'd expect with a Hamilton coach team, the rotation this year is deep, nine deep. Sometimes they go 12 deep this year, nine deep. When I looked at the guys playing regular minutes, nobody plays 30 minutes a game. That's a staple of Florida State of recent vintage with Leonard Hamilton, his group. He just rotates guys in and out and has fresh guys out there as a result all the time. The guys to watch, there's a lot of guys to watch because he plays so many guys so many minutes. MJ Walker, the 6'5 senior point guard, 6'8 junior Raekwon Gray, there's Scotty Barnes, a 6'9 freshman who's 6'9, but he's a leading assist guy on this team. He's a leading creator on this team, 4.2 assists a game. Anthony Polite, you remember him probably, he's a junior. Balsa Koprivica, the Serbian, he missed the Wake Forest game, injured his ankle in warmups. We don't know if he'll be available. Last I looked, hadn't seen any updates on him. But he's 7-1, 9.2 points a game, 5.8 rebounds a game, a presence in the post. And then Raekwon Evans, a couple of Raekwons on this team with different spelled names. What this team does offensively, when I've only started this year using the synergy numbers, and it really helps me see a team differently. Because when you watch games, sometimes you can get kind of stuck in just seeing what you see, right? Kind of like, you're without a program, you're watching a play. Who's that? Why are they doing this? I was surprised that spot ups are such an important part. In fact, spot ups are 25.8% of their offense. But then when you look at their 3-point shooting, they're third in the conference in threes, 20th nationally. Now Virginia's first in 3-point shooting. But these are two very similar teams in that respect. Tall teams that shoot threes. Walker is a 44.4% 3-point shooter. Raekwon Gray and Barnes is 46.8%. So he's an assist guy and 27% 3 points. I'll have to in fact update that. For some reason it says 2.7%. I know it's 27.0 in the story. Raekwon Evans, 47.4%. So you got guys that can spot up. And actually there's another guy that I didn't even list, Sardir Calhoun, a 6'6 junior, averages like five a game, but he's their best spot up guy, 45.2% on spot ups. And then Walker and then Evans, what we have to watch for transition. This is a team, they play a 10 possession per game faster pace than UVA does. Most teams don't get to those 10 possessions extra in a UVA game. And Florida State knows that, but they will try when they can to push the pace. watch Koprivica actually on as a finisher. He gets up the floor. Credit to a big guy getting up the floor. Their inside game is 18.5% of their possessions, and they're listed as excellent on lane cuts, and that's where you watch for Raekwon Gray. He is 17 of 20, 1.739 points per possession on lane cuts. Watch that guy when the ball gets inside. He will flash to the rim. And Koprivica is pretty solid on offensive rebounds. He's excellent, listed as excellent by Synergy on offensive rebounds, 11 of 16 on stick backs. They're not very good at post-ups. Post-ups, they're actually listed as below average. So this team is ranked by Synergy as below average. So, and not very good. Average on pick and rolls. They don't go to the roller much. When they do, they're excellent, but they just don't go much. So maybe it's a small sample size kind of thing. Koprivica, watch for there again. Walker as the ball handler on pick and rolls is 25.8% turnover rate on pick and rolls as a ball handler. So a little sketchy there for your point guard to be in that range on pick and rolls. Very feast or famine there as far as that goes. So, and defensively, it's interesting. This KenPom.com has this team ranked 48th nationally right now in adjusted defensive efficiency. That would be the lowest for this team since the 2015-2016 season. That was that last Florida State team didn't get an NCAA tournament invitation. And so, you know, it's 48th, again, kind of like I was saying about Virginia being 25th. I mean, 48th out of 357, you're still right around 10%, top 10% in the country. And so it's a good defensive team, just not as good as recent teams have been defensively. You know, one thing Hamilton does, he doesn't have a star system. You know, they have guys in the NBA, but he has a lot of athletes and then he just throws them out there. But this team is still kind of finding itself defensively. So the analysis of this game is kind of hard because I really see two teams that match up really well and they're very similarly constructed. Florida State is actually the biggest team in the country. KenPom.com, I think I might have mentioned this in a recent podcast. They actually list a team's average height on the floor at any moment in time. They've got a metric for figuring that out. And Florida State ranks number one nationally. Their lineup, you won't see anybody under 6'4 play minutes in this game anyway. There's a couple of guys that will get garbage time minutes, but you won't see those guys in this game. Virginia, aside from Kia Clark, is pretty similar. You know, Reese Beekman, Casey Morzell at 6'3", and then, you know, your front line of Hauser at 6'8", Murphy at 6'9", Huff at 7'1". Thomas Watatensai will spell Murphy. He's 6'5", and a really good defender at 6'5". You know, Francisco Cafaro and Caden Shedrick are both 6'11 guys who will spell Hauser and Huff in the post. And I'm trying to think, usually either Beekman or Clark's on the floor. It's unless it's garbage time, you're not going to see Virginia playing without either Beekman or Clark on the floor. So both teams are big. They like to spread the floor. They like to shoot threes and the threat of the three, keeping the middle open. They're not teams that will dump it down in the post and try to score much that way. And they both like to clamp down on D. There's a reason these games of late have been dogfights. Last year, Virginia lost by 4 in Tallahassee, 1 by 5 in Charlottesville. The year before, actually the last team to beat Florida State, the national championship year for UVA was Florida State. The last team to beat UVA in the national championship year in 2019 was Florida State in the ACC tournament. And that was a game that Florida State controlled. That was ACC semifinals that year. And Florida State controlled that game from the tip and won, I want to say, by 10 points. And then the year before, there were a couple other close games. I mean, this is a series that is very evenly matched. And then when you look, so the last thing I'll go over and go to our website, look, read the report thoroughly. I got to make a couple edits. I just noticed. The metrics that I use to help me determine the outcome of games, or at least think about the outcome of games. Disagreement a little bit here. The ESPN BPI has Virginia plus 3.1, a 63% win probability. Then KenPom has Virginia as a 1-point favorite with a 53% win probability. Then Bart Torvik actually has Florida State a 1-point favorite with a 55% win probability. So it's a 50-50 game. It should be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I say a lot of fun. Sitting here last night, I'm sitting here in my podcast studio, man cave. My heart rate went a little too high a few times, and that wasn't a game that Virginia controlled. Tomorrow night, it should be pretty high throughout the duration. This is a game that I expect will be like those games of the last couple of years that will come down to, last TV timeout. We're going to still be wondering what the heck's going on. That's the fun part. I mean, yeah, you know, I think the fan and some of us sometimes would like to think of to ourselves, you'd like to see a blowout, but actually you kind of do want to see a tight game. That's the excitement of college basketball in particular. So for us tomorrow night, if you're listening to this on Monday, it's tonight. We will have coverage, of course. We will have our live coverage from the home studio, the game's in Tallahassee. So I'm not making the trip. Probably should. It's warmer down there certainly than it is here in Virginia. Game's in Tallahassee, 7 o'clock tip. So we'll have live a live blog, and of course you're watching. What if you're watching, and then what's the value of our live blog? you get Scott German and I, we see things maybe that you see, but don't know what you're seeing, so to speak, because of our years of wasting time watching these games and breaking them down and analyzing them. And so during the media timeouts or other timeouts in a game, we'll throw some observations down, what, you know, what sets are working offensively or not for Virginia, what defensive approaches are working or not. And then kind of just go from there, trends and that kind of thing. So there's a value. I mean, I'm not saying certainly don't watch the game and just read our blog, but our blog is, I think, a compliment to the experience of watching a UVA game. We try to make it that. And then after the game, you know, we have everything. We'll have the quick recap. We'll have the breakdown, you know, whatever the story of the game is. We'll have comments from Coach Bennett and whatever players are made available to us via Zoom. Breakdown what they've had to say and more. It's a good thing, I think. So that's coming up tomorrow night. Again, tip is 7 o'clock. It's Big Monday, UVA Florida State. Looking forward to a big matchup there in the ACC. Thank you for your time today. It's been a lot of fun as always. And please, if you have any questions, anything for me, you can tweet me at Aug Free Press. I say tweet me. It's really, that's the official, the website, the official Twitter account, but we monitor that, of course, all the time. You can go to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. If you're live watching now, that's where you are. Messages there. You can email me, the email address on the website, augustafreepress2@gmail.com. Love to hear, or comment on stories. Comment on our stories and just ask us what you want us to kind of weigh in on. We're glad to do that. Thanks for your time again, everybody, and have a great day.